Welcome back to the Ross Report. Now, here's JR.
We are back on the Ross Report, and on the phone is my friend Gail Kim. Gail, how are you?
I'm great, JR. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for coming on with us. Are you in Florida?
I'm actually in Georgia right now. I'm about an hour north of Atlanta because this is where my husband's working. And on, you know, we're just discussing that on my off time when I'm not working with TNA, I'm usually with my husband.
That's good. Hey, that's good. Mm-hmm. That brings me to my first question. How is life as a Mrs. Robert Irvine?
Well, I would definitely say, just like everyone thinks the wrestling business is so glamorous, it's the same. I mean, of course, we get the nice perks, and, you know, when we go to restaurants, certain restaurants, we get treated nicely. But on the same end, you know, we will go eat. Surprisingly, people are always shocked. We'll go eat wherever we can. I mean, we'll go to an Applebee's. We'll go to a Waffle House. I mean, if that's the only thing in a small town, that's where we eat.
Sure.
And then the other point is that normally they want to impress my husband so much that they get so nervous or scared, and it's actually pretty comical.
Maybe they're afraid he's going to pull that sledgehammer out of his, you know, his collapsible sledgehammer and start taking walls out.
I don't know. They're always trying to please him. Yeah. So it's funny because my food always will come out right, but his won't, because I think they're trying to overcompensate.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, he's a, you know, I'm a big fan of Restaurant Impossible. I'm a weekly viewer, and that's no BS. I like the show. I can pass quizzes on the show. I got the format down. You know, when you've been in TV as long as I have, of course, people understand you have a format, you have a roadmap, you have a, mm-hmm. and it's what we do. So I know when he's going to bring out his his builder and his designer, and I know when he's, it's good. And I was telling somebody the other day, one of my agent, Barry Bloom, produces a show called Bar Rescue.
Oh, yeah. We know Bar Rescue.
And so I said, your guy, John Tapper, is starting to do more things like Robert Irvine does, where he's actually trying to help people mend their fences and get families back together. It's not all about you're using too much salt or your restaurant's ugly. He's trying to mend people's families, which I think is cool as heck.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, we were both on Dinner Impossible, and that's where I met my husband. And the most common comment that we get from a lot of fans is that they really enjoy Restaurant Impossible a lot more than Dinner Impossible. I love Dinner Impossible, mm-hmm. but it's a very intense, you know, quick-paced show, whereas this one, as you know, just like wrestling, it makes the emotional connection, and I think that's why it's such a success, because people cry and people love to just get emotionally attached. And who knew that my husband was going to be such a great therapist? And people love that.
He's a culinary Dr. Phil.
He really is. I always call him, he's half Dr. Phil, because he's a straight shooter, and then at the same time he's kind of got the sensitivity sometimes as a Dr. Drew.
Well, that's good. That's a good combination.
Yeah.
Successful combination. I saw the other day he was in a show with a black family in Oklahoma mm-hmm. City that he, mm-hmm. and I didn't know, you know, I didn't know he was even in town, or I would have tried to venture by and settle over something, but I saw that show. Well, did you ever think when you're a little girl growing up that your wedding would be a nationally televised event?
No, I mean, I never even really, I mean, of course I wanted to get married, but I never had that whole fairy tale dream of the big wedding. I think I thought about the dress, just like, because I'm very into fashion, but my husband was the one that said no, because I had suggested maybe we should just do a little small, you know, go on an island and just have a very tiny wedding and make it very easy. And he said, no, I want to make this the fairy tale wedding that I dreamed of and you dreamed of. And he did. I mean, it was honestly the best day of my life. I think, I don't know whether it's because I put such low expectations, because I didn't want to make it, you know, I didn't want to have all these ideas of what it should be. And I was so relaxed that day, and I truly, truly took in every moment. And it was such a great party, and it was awesome, and everyone has always said, you guys throw a really good party. You need to do that again.
Yeah, it was. I watched that episode at least twice, maybe three times.
And you know, it's so funny, actually. So many people have seen it. I mean, so many people. And the majority of people who have seen it has approached us has been guys. And normally you wouldn't think guys would be like, hey, I loved your wedding. But guys always tell us, I loved your wedding. I saw your wedding. And you'd think women would, but it's funny to hear. Yeah.
Well, I love the show because, I met your husband same day you met him.
Yes.
As a matter of fact. And, you know, luckily for me and him, it didn't turn out the same with you and him, but, that's neither here nor there. The issue is that I knew both of you, and especially you, and then some of the wrestling people that came to the wedding, that was cool. I thought that was neat. I think it's a lot like the best TV wrestling are the shows where you have personal issues and you get to know the participants, whether they're adversarial or they're partners or they're breaking up or they're getting together, but where you get to know the personalities and you can make that emotional investment, it's a better deal. And on your wedding, I got to know a lot of the folks are involved. So to me, I thought it was cool as heck, and he did a hell of a job in organizing. I'll tell you that, boy.
He really did. I mean, I had no stress whatsoever, and I mean, I wish every woman could find a man like him because, I mean, how many women would actually trust, you know, the future husband to plan anything? I just said, hey, babe, go ahead, and I trust your taste. I trust your judgment, and go ahead.
Have at it. Hey, when you guys are at home, which is apparently not that often, because I was doing my research for this show and reading a lot of interviews that Robert had done and some other interviews that you had done. And knowing the wrestling life, as I do, and knowing that he's on the road so darn much with his charity work, notwithstanding his Food Network responsibilities, when you guys are at home, who does the cooking?
Oh, that's definitely him. But I will say, because we're home on average, maybe 3 days a month. I mean, I'm on the road more than I've ever been in my life, including the WWE days, which is, you know, takes up a lot of your life when you work for them. I'm home less than ever, but we rarely eat at home. Once in a while, I will say he'll say, oh, I'm sick of eating out. I'm just going to cook. I used to be the cook for all the, you know, all my friends and everything. But then when I married Robert, I just became so intimidated. I felt like the things I was good at that I was doing wrong. I'm like, am I doing it right? Am I doing this right? You know, so I just kind of let him take over, and that's his strength. So,
yeah, he's good. He's, I learned a lot. I told somebody this the other day, we had two barbecue restaurants and if I had watched, more of, Restaurant Impossible, and this is no kidding, I'm not BSing.
Or
if I had known him where I could have access to asking a few questions, I feel very confident that both my establishments would have been successful. I really do.
You know,
I believe that.
It's too bad, because I actually, there's a couple of places that we do like to go eat when we're home, and there's one particular pizza place that we love, and they were not doing well in business, and because they knew his show and everything, the manager, well, Robert couldn't get him on the show because it was a franchise, and they don't do franchises on the show. But they did ask him for his help, and he was more than willing to help. Robert's just that kind of guy that, you know, he's always trying to help people. I mean, that now he's at a point in his life where his mission is, you know, to give back.
Yeah.
And I think that's, of course, part of the reason why I love him so much.
Well, you're a great couple. Yeah, he's a good man. You're a great couple. I love his gimmick. I love the fact that he's always got the same black shirt on. He's he's driving
the Lexus.
Absolutely. And and I read somewhere where you had convinced him to not dye his hair, just let it go, be natural.
Yes.
And I think that's a smart move.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's humanizing. Well, humanizing.
Yeah, because as you know, as his hair grew out, he would get a haircut because he's very military, very clean shaven, and always likes to be clean cut. And I noticed that his gray hair was coming through, and I said, "Babe, you look so much sexier just being natural and just go for it. And then, so he kind of did, you know, I said, at least salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, the producers, everybody on set, the whole crew was like, Gail, thank you for, you know, making him go all natural, because it just, it looks great.
Well, yeah, I think he looks yeah. doing good. Hey, one final question regarding Robert and you.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, this is one of those crazy JR things. You guys must have the most interesting passport in the world.
Yes.
Because what is your citizenship? I'm just curious.
His citizenship is American.
Oh.
But, of course, he was born near Manchester, England, well, Salisbury, England.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm Canadian, and I still have my Canadian citizenship, and I'm a permanent resident of the U.S. And so we, you know, we travel a lot. I mean, just in the last couple of months, for TNA, I went to India, the U.K., we did our U.K. tour, and then we went to Japan. So, I mean,
wow.
That was in a matter of 3 to 4 months. It's quite a challenge balancing our schedule. For example, the next 2 weeks, we looked at our schedules and noticed that we're not going to see much of each other. So I'm literally going to fly to San Francisco next week for one day just to sleep with him, and then, you know, just so I can see his face and sleep in the same bed as him, and then go on to work.
Wow.
So, you know, those are the kind of sacrifices that we have to make.
That's what makes a marriage work, though, sacrifices. And then at the end of the day, that day's a golden day.
Yeah,
you know, I said, well, this Ultimate Warrior thing that came, you know, unfortunately is passing at 54. I said this on my show, and I guess it resonated with a lot of people, you know, that our tomorrows are not guaranteed, and they're not,
exactly.
You know, so
yeah.
That's a cool deal.
My husband says that all the time. Yeah. He says, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
No,
you know?
No.
So if and when we ever argue or get upset, he just says, Gail, who knows if there's going to be tomorrow or next week, and it puts things in perspective.
Well, with your ethnicity and
mm-hmm.
his accent
yeah.
and everything that goes with this whole international marriage,
yes.
How does American TSA people, do you confuse them sometimes, or are you cool? Because I'm looking at, hey, if you were in Oklahoma,
yeah.
I mean, they get confused at TSA from time to time. You know, I get pulled out of the line. You know, hey, JR, come here a minute. And they want to pat you down, and then they want an autograph.
Oh, well, we don't normally have issues. And, I mean, he gets – it's funny because people always ask, you know, who gets recognized more. And wrestling is such a small audience. Like, I shouldn't say small. It's a big audience, but it's a very specific audience.
Correct.
And most of the time, if fans do see me, and if it's guys, they're definitely afraid of any of the divas, the knockouts, the girls. I mean, they're intimidated.
Right.
And then with Robert, he's just more of, he has kids recognizing him, grandmothers. I mean, he's got family, you know, everybody, guys. So he's got a wider range. Normally, we don't have any problems through airports.
That's good.
That's good.
That's another stupid question I had. But anyway, let's get into the wrestling side of this thing.
Okay.
A lot of wrestling questions. And some of these questions came from Twitter, and you helped me mm-hmm. do that. I appreciate it. But I always like to ask people that are in the business,
mm-hmm.
and it's not a real creative question, when did you become a wrestling fan?
I mean, I watched wrestling as a little kid with my sister. My memories go as far as, you know, trying to stay up and keep my eyes awake to watch Saturday night's main event. And like I've said in numerous interviews, it's been, you know, the days when everybody watched wrestling, when it was at its biggest point, probably with Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Bret Hart, you know, Tito Santana, all those times. And I just remember things, you know, everything was just so real and believable, and it was just a different time back then. And then I kind of fell out of it when I was probably in high school, and then I got caught up on the Stephanie Test Triple H storyline again when I was about 20,
mm-hmm.
and then I pretty much discovered that, you know, I'm going to try and wrestle. And then I got signed by WWE like 2 years later.
I thought you were going to say you really got hooked on JR and the King's commentary on Monday nights and on TSN.
It.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, yeah, sure, that's it. Who was your, when you were young, that first experience, the Saturday night's main event era, who was your favorite?
Oh, Tito Santana.
Really?
I think that was, yeah, and it's so weird to, I mean, obviously, I loved all the baby faces because I was a kid and, you know,
sure.
was always, I remember watching Ricky Steamboat and Jake the Snake, those storylines specifically that go to my mind, Tito and Greg the Hammer Valentine. And but I love Tito for some reason. I think it was because at that time he is more kind of like, if you would call the high flyer or the fast action, you know, high.
Yeah.
And Ricky Steamboat as well. But I was just drawn to Tito for some reason. I have no idea why, but that's what I remember.
Well, there you have it, folks. Big news flash. Gail Kim had
I met him, he was the nicest guy.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Well, he's
very happy.
So we know now Gail had a girl crush on Rick, on Tito Santana.
Hi, Tito.
You know, he's one of the nicest guys in the business, and he had a college degree when he got into the business, and I tell all his young kids, boy, what is your plan B? Well, I don't have a plan B. Well, you got to have a plan B. Well, why?
Yeah.
I'm going to be a star in wrestling. Well, I said, well, what if you're not? Oh, but I am. Okay, it's great to have confidence.
Yes.
But if people say, why are you so dogged about people training to be a wrestler about this damn plan B thing? And I said, because if they start training and they get midway through the training and they realize this is harder than I thought, or I might not make it, and they know they have nothing to fall back on, there is a feeling of hopelessness that comes over them. And sometimes when people get into that hopeless feeling state, Gail, you know, you do dumb things.
Yes, you know? I agree. And, you know, I've seen a lot of wrestlers go through, depression when they've been pretty much pushed out of the business. And whether it's turned to drugs, not necessarily, but I've just seen people go in a normal route, go get a job and not turn to drugs, but they're still going through a depressive state. They need to get therapy. I've seen a lot of things. I always tell little fans, kids who say, I want to become a wrestler. That's the first thing I say to them is, okay, become a wrestler, but just make sure you get your education.
Absolutely.
And you have something to fall back on.
Well,
I was very fortunate. I'm still very fortunate to be in this business this long. I'm very lucky.
Did you get trained by Ron Hutchison in Toronto?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
What a nice guy he is.
Yeah, he definitely trained me properly. Everyone went there that was from Toronto, from Trish to Christian Edge, everybody. So, I knew I was going to a reputable school, and I think that he really trained me right.
Yeah, I met you. Trish introduced you to me when I was in charge of the talent roster backstage at the Air Canada Center at a Raw taping, I believe it was. Might have been pay-per-view, I'm not sure, but it was at backstage. Do you remember that?
I have the worst memory, and that was probably the scariest period of my life, so I don't remember.
You made a great impression. I thought you looked great.
You had an
athletic look. You're very respectful, and of course Trish was. You know, she vouched for you. That was good enough for me because, you know, she had achieved so much. Too many great things in WWE,
yeah.
And so that was kind of like all I needed. And I knew that you were trained by the same guy that, you know, everything was in place. You had done everything you needed to do to get a chance, in my opinion.
That's nice to hear about Trish because, before I even started wrestling, I saw her in fitness magazines, and I looked up to her, and then I saw her in WWE, and I'm like, oh, my God, I think I can do that, too. And, she was from Toronto, and that's really kind of her to say that for me.
Oh, yeah, she was one of your big advocates. And, I don't know if it was just the gender thing or a Toronto thing or just being a nice thing. It could have been all of them because she is all those things. She's a good person. She was always good about promoting the ladies. When I had her on here, we talked a lot about the locker room environment back in the day, and how much I'm not there to see it every week any longer. But I can tell you that for the last time I was exposed to the locker room with the youth movement, so to speak, it's a different environment. It seems to me like than it was back in the day, shall we say.
Oh, yeah. You know? Oh, my gosh. I would definitely say that just came with, once the Tough Enoughs and the Diva Search and all that stuff, and mind you, I'm not trashing them because anybody would take that opportunity if they wanted to be in this business to be on those shows. I know indie wrestlers who tried to be on those shows to get their opportunity. But at the same time, the people who didn't go out to seek to be in this business, if they were handed things through the years, that level of respect is not quite the same. And I think that's where it just started kind of dropping off.
Yeah.
Slowly. And, but mind you, you know, I work with Christy Hemme to this day, and she was the very first Diva Search contestant, and she's still in this business in a different form.
Right.
But she's always plugged away and has passion and has been respectful. And for me, just me specifically, respect has always been at the top of my list of what you should have in this business. And I think anyone that works with me will tell you that. That's a shame that it's changed through the years, but hopefully we can get that back.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's unattainable. I just think it's just a matter of how they enter in to the equation, and then what they're taught. I mentioned this to some guys. WWE invited me nicely enough to come. I did a show in New Orleans at the House of Blues, and then WWE invited me to come to the Hall of Fame and attend WrestleMania and so forth. Yeah. Nice of them to do that, and I appreciate it. And but I think that I mentioned to somebody, it's really, really important nowadays for management to realize that the need for mentors is a higher level than it's ever been since I've been in the business. And I got in the business in 1974, before you were born. I was making a living in the wrestling business. But right now, the need for mentors, whether it be in management, but also on the roster, is huge.
I agree 100%. And even for someone like me that's been in the business for 14 years now, I mean, even when I'm confused and I don't know quite the answer, I will turn to a Bubba, you know, Bubba Ray and people that have been in the business longer than me. And because Bubba is all about respect and old school. And I'll ask him, or I'll ask other people that I respect on that level as well.
Well, you know, and for those that are listening, whether you're in Canada or United States or, you know, we get a lot of, our shows download a lot in Australia and through, you know, UK, all these things. Gail Kim and I are talking about respect. It's not exclusive to the wrestling business. You should utilize respect in every walk of your life, and no matter your age, you don't outgrow respect. You're not too young to have respect. It's imperative that you practice it every day. And I wondered one question before I go to break. What simple, because people are going to ask this question. They've asked me this question. Okay. In your view, what are the major differences in working in WWE and working in Impact?
I'm going to just speak from my perspective.
Of course, yeah.
It could be different for anyone. Well, number one, with WWE, I feel like that company, you have to give your life to them. I mean, they want you to eat, sleep, drink, everything wrestling. And that's fine for, I think, someone, you know, early in their life. I'm married now, and I'm just as passionate as anyone in this business. But I also know what's important, which is my family. And it's just hard. You got to sacrifice a lot more there. And I find that the second major thing for me was I was always nurtured in Impact or TNA with my talent, and they saw my talent and gave me that spotlight and that platform. Whereas with WWE, I always felt like they wanted everyone to feel scared for their job. They wanted everyone to feel like, you know, I'm not a manipulative person. I'm not willing to politic behind someone's back. And I'm not saying that it has to be that way there, but that was just the way I felt. I never felt like it wasn't a supportive environment. For example, if we had pre-tapes, that was never my strong suit. My talent laid in the ring and wrestling. So when I would do a pre-tape, even if someone, for example, in the past, like Vince Russo, said, Gail, you know, you need to say it like this, they would encourage me and be positive, whereas with WWE, I felt more nervous and second-guessing myself. And, you know, I react more positively to a supportive environment than that type of environment. So those are probably the two major things that stick out in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference, and the schedule, of course.
Yeah,
but that goes with the sacrifice.
Yeah, schedules. Hey, look, if your company's doing well, the schedules mm-hmm. are going to be beastly sometimes. That's just the nature of the game in that situation. It's up to management, and it's mm-hmm. up to those that are trying to steer the ship to do all they can to create a positive work environment.
Yeah,
and it doesn't take too many. Behind the scenes, politicians are those with an agenda to mm-hmm. to screw that whole thing up.
Yeah,
you know, I know that when I had that role as the head of talent relations, that I didn't do everything perfectly. I know that, but I also know that I didn't go out of my way to create an agenda to make it a negative work environment.
Yeah. I will say, JR, I came in at the very tail end of you being the head of talent relations. I think Johnny just took over at that point or something. And I have never heard, I have only heard positive things about you being in that role. I never heard one negative thing.
Well.
And I think that was the major difference. I mean, Johnny, okay, you know, Johnny, I got along with Johnny, and there's things I do like about him. There's things I don't like about him. But one thing I will say, I've heard a lot of bad things about him, you know, so I've never heard anything bad about you. So.
Well, we'll work on that. I'm sure there's out there. We'll get somebody
I've never heard it.
Yeah, somebody will tweet us. Well, Gail, did you hear this about JR? You know, is that one time in Sioux City, all the big companies, you can't say someone's a lady wrestler or a female mm-hmm. athlete. Mm-hmm. In WWE, you're a diva.
Yes.
In TNA, you're a knockout.
Mm-hmm.
And God knows when Jeff Jarrett starts his company, what they'll be.
Well,
I mean, you know, I'm not knocking Jeff, but, you know, you can't just say, you know, there's a gender, you know, it's crazy, all this stuff. But nonetheless, one of the things that people on Twitter, I got a lot of comments about your matches with Beth Phoenix, and Are you and Beth buddies?
Yeah, you know, Beth and I started out on the indies together. So I pretty much wrestled for the first year and a half with Tracy Brooks pretty much exclusively because there's no other girls to wrestle. And then Beth was from Buffalo, which is just across the border.
Right.
So we worked with her a lot. And Beth is just seriously so good. She's the one girl that I will say, because I'm pretty controlling when it comes to being in the ring, but Beth was one of those girls that I completely trusted to lead me, and she just knows what the heck she's doing. I mean, she's just so talented, strong, skilled, and she is the nicest girl, a great human being.
Yep.
I only wish that we could have had an actual feud or program together mm-hmm. because the one match we had was on Superstars, and we thought it was like a pay-per-view match because we had 7 minutes and we were so excited.
You know, that's refreshing to hear you say. I feel the same way about her and Adam Copeland, a.k.a.
Yeah.
Edge, and parents of a lovely little girl. But it's a damn shame that in this era of wrestling where we're having a celebration because you get 7 minutes of TV time.
I know.
You know,
I'm telling you, JR, when I switched over from WWE to TNA, within the first 2 months, I handled it just barely, but for the first 2 months, I mean, I thought I was going to die in the ring because I was so used to having these six-girl, eight-girl tags and being in the ring for maybe 2-3 minutes, and then I was getting anywhere between 6 to up to 16 minutes on a pay-per-view. And now I have mostly singles matches. For us to have a tag match is very unusual. So I'm probably in the best shape of my life right now.
Who do you work with as a who's your agent type person, your producer type person that works with the knockouts in TNA?
Well, right now it's Pat Kenny.
Yeah.
But previously, I mean, I've had Scott D'Amore, D'Lo Brown was. I never really worked with Al that much. I think one or two matches. It kind of just rotates, and Pat was pretty much put with us to work on our characters and concentrate on, you know, promos and character work. And like I said, when it comes to the wrestling aspect of it, you know, I get the business of the match, and then he'll tell you too. I'm a little controlling when it comes to that, just because I just feel like, as D'Lo would say, we are the artists, and we're supposed to create, you know, that picture. And I feel always very strongly about how I want the match to go, and I always want it to be very creative and innovative and exciting for the fans to watch.
The Fit Finley does a great job with the ladies in WWE.
Yes.
Has
yes.
for a long time. I don't think he's ever gotten rid of the credit that, you know, he's earned in that role. But in any event, was he... Do you remember the one another Twitter question that kind of ties into that? I'm assuming that Fit was the was one of the agents in the Divas Battle Royal at WrestleMania 25. Is that?
Yeah.
Now I, you know what? I was there. I called one match. I think on that show. I think I called. I think I called maybe Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker.
Yeah, that was a good one. To
oh
call.
Yeah, you're gonna get one. That's the one to get, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But I remember at the time, now again, they just got through doing WrestleMania 30, so we're talking about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
What the hell was the controversy about the Divas Battle Royal?
The only controversy that I remember is that the tag team champions at the time was either Miz and Morrison or the Carlito and Primo. And something happened where they got switched to the dark match. And the only controversy I remember is people thinking maybe the girls' battle royal should have been the dark match and the tag team title should have been part of WrestleMania. In terms of the actual controversy, I don't know. I remember Santina won that battle royal. But to be honest, that was such a blur that I don't remember any big deal.
At all. Somebody was talking about how you got eliminated.
Oh, yes. Well, we didn't really have time to really go through having 25 girls in the match.
Ugh.
So I wasn't supposed to get eliminated when I did. Lisa, or I should say Victoria at the time, was standing on the ring apron, and we had this thing planned, and I didn't know she was going to be right there, and I hit her, and I eliminated myself early.
Oh.
So it wasn't really a big deal.
No, I
at all.
This is a Twitter question, so I didn't remember at the time being a big deal at all. Another Twitter question is, but it was kind of cool that you, at least you got on the main show at the 25th anniversary or the 25th WrestleMania, and that was in Houston, and HBK and Taker stole the show on that deal. Hey, when you heard, I didn't even write this down, I just thought of it. When you heard, that Undertaker streak was ended by Lesnar at WrestleMania. Were you surprised?
Yeah.
As a pro, were you surprised?
Yes, I think the whole wrestling world was surprised. I didn't see that coming from anywhere. I saw my Twitter blow up, and at first I thought, oh, I completely disagree with that. But now that it's passed, you know, someone made a comment that if anyone's going to be Taker, at least he's legit, which is true.
Yeah.
And also, it's nice to be surprised. I think the wrestling fans, you know, you never think you're going to be shocked, but that was a total shocker.
Yep.
I mean, to have a happy ending, of course, everybody likes a happy ending, so it would have been nice if he was undefeated. But, I mean, I think everyone was talking, and that was the whole point.
Right. So I said it's got everybody talking, and I don't know if they're talking for the right reasons or the wrong reasons, but they're certainly mm-hmm. talking. And the other thing is, and I was in New Orleans. I watched WrestleMania actually from the hotel because one of my little side gigs I have is I'm working for Fox Sports, and I did an online FoxSports.com article about WrestleMania. So it was easier for me to stay back at the hotel and watch it on the network as opposed to going to the friends, riding the friends and family bus,
yes,
and going into the room with all the fans, and because you can't hear the commentary, you miss things, and so
I agree.
Just for me, it was a better deal.
So what did you think about all that? I would love to get your info.
I was shocked. I have gone on record, which gets me in trouble sometimes. Mm-hmm. I had gone on record saying that I didn't think the streak should ever end. I thought that The Undertaker, I even had an idea, and I threw this out there not that long ago on this podcast, that the angle that I would have shot would finally be when he knew that Taker was done and he had one more in him, you have him wrestle Cena, and Cena would be the champion, and everybody's mm-hmm. been waiting on John Cena to turn heel, and why isn't it happening, blah, blah, blah. And so you have a title versus retirement match at WrestleMania, and everybody knows that Cena's going to turn heel and screw The Undertaker, and Undertaker retires. And Cena has all this immense heat because he's the guy that ended a streak, retired The Undertaker, and damn you, Cena. But you swerve it around, and you have Undertaker go over, and Undertaker wins the title, and he goes out on Next Night on Raw and says, I did everything I came to do to win the title. I won it. I have done all I can do. It's time to saddle up and ride off the sunset. Said better than that, as Vince would say.
Yeah.
And lay the belt in the ring and leave. And so the title becomes vacant, and you have a main event for your next pay-per-view. You got a tournament you can have for the vacant WWE title. It's a big deal. And he leaves whole. That was my dream scenario, but of course, too late for that. That's not going to happen.
You know what? I love it too because I like a happy ending. I mean, I would like to have seen him go down in history undefeated. Yeah. But you know what? Like I always tell fans all the time, you never know what's going on backstage.
Right.
You never know what's going on privately in the office of Vince McMahon and everybody.
Sure.
So I can't really, that's just looking at it from the outside.
Right. And I looked at it from the outside too, Gail. And the other thing that we don't mm-hmm. know, bottom line is after all these surgeries Undertaker has had, he's 49 years of age. God knows he's pulled the wagon a long time. You know, we don't know how he may have gone to the McMahon and said, hey, Vince, I trained all year for this. I've done all I can do and I'm done.
Yeah.
And so maybe, and we don't know that. Here's the thing I know. The Taker would always do what's right for business.
Yep.
And he's an honorable guy. I used to say he was a conscious of the locker room. He did so much for me as a head of talent relations. I had somebody a little problem, and, I could talk to him, which was okay. But if Taker talked to him as one of the boys, it was a whole different ball game. Whole different ball game. So, anyway, I just wondered, both of us were shocked, and both of us were saddened that the streak ended, but hey, it's showbiz. I met Sting in 86, and he's been a friend of mine ever since. You got to work with him at TNA, Impact.
Yeah.
Hell of a good guy, in my view.
Such a nice man. I mean, always so respectful, number one, of course. I'm talking about respect again. But he was always so respectful and just a very kind man. And I worked with him in my first run in TNA and my second run in TNA. So I've never had any issues, and all the guys got along with him, and he was just a good guy.
He was. I think he can help WWE if he signs with them. I think he can help WWE if he never wrestles a match.
I agree.
I think
there's certain people that can do that, definitely.
Merchandising, marketing. And then let's say you do the one big, Sting's going to have a retirement match at WrestleMania 31.
Yeah.
Okay, you could book that. I mean, even the most novice of wrestling writers, the dreaded wrestling writer room, creative guys, you can't screw that up. That's easy.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, his body obviously hurt just like any normal wrestler's body would hurt over that amount of time. But he still went out there and wrestled when he had to. I think he definitely has one left in him.
Oh, I agree. Mm-hmm. Hey, I watch you guys on Thursday nights. This one airs in the States. And John Gaborik, who I've known for years. I've known him
Big was
one of his claims to fame was the on-air kind of the father confessor on one of the seasons of Tough Enough.
Yeah.
He was the axe man. He would let you know who was staying, who was going, and all that stuff. Good guy. I hope he does well there. We visit from time to time. That'll be news. That'll make the dirt sheets. JR talks to John Gaborik. Well, of course, he's an old friend of mine.
Well, you know, I will say since he's come in, it's been nothing but positive for us. I think the talent as a whole just feels like he's so approachable and a positive energy for our company. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, to build a company, it takes time and people and everything. He can't do everything by himself. But so far, it's been so great. I look to him like a father figure. Like, I can talk to him about anything. So that's one of the positives I see in him, definitely.
Yeah, he's a good guy. And I've seen the last several weeks they've started signing some of their guys that are, I guess, to keep them in the fold. I said this before. If you look at the TNA, not just because you're on here, I said this last week, and we had Jim Cornette on, and he don't like anything. Kid, I love Corny. He was a great guest, too.
I love Jim Cornette.
He is something else. We were texting the other day or messaging about, I started giving you all these Food Network ideas because I'm a foodie at heart. And if I could be on a food show, I probably would drop everything I'm doing and run and be on a food show. And I gave my agent that barbecue crawl idea that they're doing on Food Network 5 years ago. And this lady beat me to it. But I had this idea to go find out how these little mom-and-pa barbecue places stayed in business.
Right.
And what was their secret? And how did they survive as a family, as a unit, and as a business? And I thought, I could 30-minute show. That'd be a little JR. Let's barbecue. I'd like to talk to people. That might be an idea. So, anyway, I don't know how I got on that deal, but nonetheless, I think that John is going to do a great job there. And I was saying this last week, because I'll make my point that the core talent in TNA is damn good.
I agree.
It's really good.
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, we take things, sometimes we're challenged with, whatever, as they do in WWE, stories change all the time, but I definitely feel like our locker room, you won't find many people with no experience or little experience. Most of them are very experienced and will just give you gold every time they're out there. I mean, I love this group of girls I'm working with now. I mean, to have the platform that we do and the time, and they care so much about the Knockouts division, this is what I thrive for. I'm just a better, I'm a better fit for TNA than WWE. It's just a better company for me just because of the women and the women's division and, how they give us the time. And the other day we had a one-night-only pay-per-view, and they gave us 11 minutes, the girls, and I was like, whoa, 11 minutes, oh my gosh. I don't know what to do with that.
It's great.
I love it.
Yeah, I get a kick out of, I like that you're a heel.
Yes.
I think you're a great heel. I said this.
Thank you.
I don't know there's anybody of your, any female in the business better right now today than you, period.
Oh, thank you, JR. That's a huge compliment coming from you.
Because you understand, the thing I said this before about being a heel, you can't be cool and be a heel. You can't want to be, I'm just a heel now when I get to the ring. When I walk the ring, when you come through the curtain until you disappear, you have to be in character.
Yeah.
And there are certain traits and certain baggage that comes along with being a heel that you have to take with a grain of salt or you're not going to be successful. It's just impeccable that you got to have certain heel traits.
I definitely change my style of wrestling when I'm a heel. I just go more technical when I'm a heel, more submissions, I definitely tone down besides my signature stuff. I don't do anything too flashy in terms of high flying stuff because obviously those are babyface moves.
Sure.
But one thing I will say that a lot of people who come through this business and don't understand, and there's a few people like Kurt Angle who's so good at it, and that's, people have to remember that you always have a job, at least for the most part, if you stay healthy and you have a good attitude, that if you help build other talents,
absolutely,
that you will stay in this business. And that's one thing I've never had a problem doing.
Well, you're a good soul. I mean, that's being raised by good parents. That's being broken in by a good teacher, and being surrounded by good people. You understand the right and the wrongs, and you come back to that one word that we started this whole conversation with, basically, is respect. Respect is so imperative in this business. And see, ladies and men like you that I have great respect for, that word again, it are mm-hmm. people that they want to give back to the business. They're not looking for the business of wrestling to give them their trampoline hop to the next level of something else.
Exactly. I think that if that's the case, I mean, you're not going to, in the end, really be successful in this specific business. I've seen a lot of people who use it as a stepping stone, and yeah, they can have their temporary success, but not long lasting. And I just find that, you know, I've never been compromised. I don't feel like fans look at me and say, you know, some fans who are just overanalyzers or negative will say, oh, she's a jobber or whatever. They don't even know the term of that anymore. But I just feel like, yeah, you need to build new talent. And I don't feel like I look bad when I'm building new talent. I feel like I'm still showing my abilities, and I'm still trying to be entertaining and tell the story. And I think so far it's been pretty successful.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think the company knows, Impact knows I am a company girl, and I want to build new talent, and I also want to be used as well. And I think that's part of the reason why I am used, is because I am willing to build talent in the future, and it's important.
You're unselfish, and that's imperative, and you're professional. I tell kids all the time, I tell some young guys, have you got any advice for me? You know, these kids that I see at, like I saw at WrestleMania, a lot of them came up, and some of them introduced themselves to me for the first time, and it was nice.
Yeah.
And they said, you got any advice for me? I said, yeah, don't become high maintenance.
Yeah.
Pretty simple. Come to work on time. Don't get dependent on bad things. Don't flunk any tests, and don't become high maintenance, and take your work very responsible, and give respect to the business that you're in, and respect all those that came before you, and try to, when you leave it better than when you found it. Pretty simple.
Exactly.
Pretty simple.
Very good advice.
What are you going to do? Last question here. What's up for Gail Kim after wrestling.
Everybody asked that question. I have a couple of things. I don't want to jinx it. I do have one plan. Of course, I love fashion, and I'll just give that little hint. I don't want to jinx it, but I'm slowly working on little plans that way. And then, you know, sometimes people bring up maybe helping with the company in terms of, I mean, maybe helping the girls,
sure,
train them, age them, whatever. Maybe
mentoring.
I'm very open to a lot of suggestions. All I know is, bottom line, I want to be passionate, because I was very fortunate to have this passion in my life that I can never go to do something that I'm not passionate about, because this has never been a job for me. I love it so much, and I'm so fortunate. So I just want that to continue.
Well, I'm very proud of you, and I'm sure happy that we were able to provide you an opportunity to come to WWE.
Thank you so much.
You were never an issue. You always worked hard. I always felt like you were underutilized. I'm glad now that you're getting your spotlight that you've earned in those 14 years of hitting the road. So tell Robert I said hello.
Oh, wait. I'm going to let you speak to him.
Okay.
This is a surprise.
Oh, great.
Hold on. 1 second. He's in the hotel room. I left the hotel room. Here you go.
All right.
Hello.
Hello, Robert.
Hey, how are you?
That's good. I'm good. I had a wonderful conversation with your wife. I got the feeling that we probably had a longer conversation than perhaps you've had with her on some days with your schedules.
I'm sure of that. That's for sure. I get it for 5 minutes.
How are you? Good?
I'm good. Just very, very busy and, you know, enjoying life. being busy.
I saw your show from Oklahoma City the other day with the African-American family that you rescued in OKC.
Yeah.
I wish I'd known you were going to be in town. I would have taken you out for dinner or got in line and been one of the people you'd invited in to come in and eat.
That's my fault, JR. I should have told you.
I'm a good eater.
Unfortunately for me, JR, I don't know whether I'm coming or going some days. And, you know, I go on and I do these things. And it's so funny because a couple of weeks before that, I was in a casino in Oklahoma and doing a show, and I didn't even know that my old chef was the executive chef of that property. So
wow.
Oh, so, hey, it's next time, I'm sure.
We were talking about Dinner Impossible when we were all on the show, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I burned the chicken.
An amazing show, and it's still being shown, you know, on Cooking Channel right now. It's the number one show.
Do you know that my wife watched it again the other day and DVR'd it? So it's permanently now on our DVR list of our television at home. And I told Gail in our interview, I said, well, that's the day we both met Robert.
Yes, it is.
Yes, yeah. And that show, actually, or part of that show, is in our wedding show. And
yeah, we were talking about that show, too.
So, yeah, we've got some good history.
And that's the day I burnt the chicken, and I remember I had to run do the SummerSlam. Had a kind of a multitasking day, as you can imagine. And
right.
I saw you at SummerSlam at the Staples Center. I said, Chef, you got to cover my ass now on this chicken thing because I burnt the chicken. Don't grill me. You said, don't worry, I've got it handled. And you did.
We don't do things like that. You're a good man, and we take care of our own, that's for sure.
Well, listen, I appreciate you jumping on the phone. Gail, you're the best. I'll keep watching you on Thursday night. Robert, I told Gail I don't miss a week of your show. I love the fact that you're counseling these people and you're trying to get families together. It's more about using too much salt or changing the tablecloth. I love the fact that you're helping bond families back together, and that's one of the fastest hours on TV, so you're doing a great job. And
well, I appreciate that. And listen, we have a new show. I can't tell you what is coming, but, well, there's the three new shows. But the one show might be very interesting to you, and I'll let Gail tell you when it's the right time.
Okay.
For your barbecue stuff. But
okay, great.
I will I'll let you know in plenty of time, but I can't spill the beans yet, as they say.
All right. No pun intended. So. All right. Well, we'll not spill the beans. I'll support it any way I can. And when you're getting ready to launch it, we'll tweet it out and do whatever we got to do. We'll have you back on and talk about it sometime or something. So
super. Well,
it's all good.
It's more to help you and me. So,
well, I'm all for that. I'm all for that. So, listen, thank you guys for being with us and. I really do appreciate both of you, and I'm proud to call you friends.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good.
Take care, bye-bye. Man, I certainly want to thank Gail Kim for being with us and her husband, Robert Irvine.